You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Ugh, you said you were over him, but his hoodie is still in your rotation. It's time. Grab your phone, snap a few pics, and sell it on Depop. Listed in minutes, with no selling fees. And just like that, a guy 500 miles away just paid full price for your closure. And right on cue.
Hey, still got my hoodie?
Nope, but I've got tonight's dinner paid for. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. List now with no selling fees. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the How to Hunt Deer podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Dan Johnson, and sitting across from me, as always recently, Jason, how are we doing, man?
Oh, good. Nice Monday.
Yeah, nice how Monday. Not bad. We got some rain.
Did you?
Yeah, I mean, we got a little bit of rain this weekend. We had baseball this weekend. We had Father's Day this weekend, which I don't know what your Father's Days ever look like, but mine are just like rant, just another day.
Yeah, it was. We just worked. That's all we did. We worked around the yard and stuff. So
yeah,
it was good. It was good though. It was stuff that needed to get done. So
yeah, baseball. Let's see. We had baseball. Outside of that, man, just we had the later games in the afternoon or in the weekend. So we didn't have like. Some weekends are games at 8 and games at 10:30, and so then we're done by noon. And then we can have the rest of the day to go do things. But we had our games were like at noon and 3:30. So the one day we didn't get done until I believe it was 5, and yesterday we had our first game at 11, I believe it was, and then our second game at 3:30 or something, 2:30 like that. And so it's just like right smack dab in the middle of the day. It's hot or it's warm. The kids are tired. And then you just like, you don't, when you get home, you don't want to catch up on any laundry or work. So that just, work or anything. So that just stacks up. And now you're just like, eh,
yeah,
I don't want to do anything. And now today I'm busy as shit and I got all this other stuff. My dryer went out, and so now I got to take my dryer apart and put a new heating element in, and so that's going to be fun. That's going to be a fun little project for me to take on.
Right. Yep. I hear you. We got a wedding coming up this Saturday, so we've had a lot to plan for, and that's at the house here, so that's why we worked all day yesterday, and we've kind of been every night, every opportunity, get stuff ready, so.
Yep. Well, like I told you earlier, I wish I could make it. I got the invite and I really wish I could go, but just baseball and life. I got every single weekend between now and the third weekend in July is booked for me from baseball or camps or family things or like the 4th of July and stuff like that. So it's getting to a point where I'm trying to balance my entire life right now.
Yeah. So during hunting season, do you think that's like a decompression time?
Oh, yeah, dude. Like, you want to like sit in a tree stand with nothing going on. And maybe I do a little work from my phone while I'm in the tree stand, to be honest with you. There has been times where if I can get phone service, I turn on my hotspot on my phone and I've been in the tree working on a laptop. Doing work. But it's hard to sit on a lone wolf and type like this on your computer and at the same time like try to keep an eye out for deer. If I do that, it's like a day where it's not so sunny. It's not so hot or extremely cold. And I can, it's like very comfortable out. And I'll pull my laptop top out and I'll work on it for a little bit.
Yeah. So when you do that, do you ever take earbuds with you and listen to music or anything like that, or listen to anything? Have you ever tried that?
Yeah. Sometimes I do. Yeah. I'm not that, like, I like to, when I get out there, if I have the opportunity, I just straight up sit down and just try to be as, like, disconnected from everything. But that doesn't always work, man, especially when you run your own business and you got, like, social media as a part of my life. It sucks. I don't like it. And so, you know, I'm sitting there on my phone doing a whole bunch of different things. And then I've never missed an opportunity at a deer that I know of because of my phone. But I'll tell you this, there's times where I've been on my phone, like reading emails and responding to emails, and maybe 30 minutes go by and I haven't lifted my head up. So who knows what could have been behind me or in front of me or whatever the case is. So I don't know, man. I just need to leave it in the truck. I want to leave it in the truck.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah. The phone's a distraction. I mean, I found myself, you know, looking at my phone or whatever, and I'll look up and there'll be deer out. But to your point, I've never missed the opportunity because of being on my phone. I've at least been acknowledged to what's going on. I will say, I go out there and I disconnect and I end up falling asleep sometimes. And that's where I miss the opportunity. That's where I honestly take my best naps, about 15 foot up.
I think my favorite is, two things. I've had a buddy who's been on his phone, just basically doom scrolling through, social media, and 170-inch deer came up on him and he didn't have a clue. And then he looked up and it was at 10 yards.
Yeah.
And he kind of like flinched, like just like that, just like a quick flinch, and it noticed him and it took off running. Uh-huh. And so he's like, dude, it was in a spot where I could have drilled him if I was prepared for it. Like I could have seen him come in, but instead I was on my phone and it cost him a giant. So, that's dangerous. That's dangerous.
Yeah.
But I do fall asleep sometimes, man. I do snooze, and then like, it's hard to do it in a saddle, but if I'm in a tree stand, I can put myself in a position where, especially on the trees that lean back.
Yeah.
And I can maybe put a foot up, or I can, I don't know. Then it's lights out. I'll strap myself in real tight.
I think the ones that are the most comfortable are the Summit used to make those climbers, you know, and they had like the suspended seat and everything. Those are the most comfortable to take a nap in.
Yep. When I get older, I want to get one of those big Millennium stands.
Yep.
They gotta be like 30 pound stands. I don't know. They're just gigantic, huge platforms, huge seats. I kind of lean back a little bit. I could see myself getting into this not very mobile hunting just to take naps in the woods.
Yeah. I agree. So strategy. I caught the tail end of the podcast the last week when I got disconnected, and you wanted to discuss some strategy and stuff.
Yes, and I honestly want to continue talking about what we're talking today. Actually, a little bit about tree stand placement on the tree, saddle placement on the tree, because I feel like it's very important in. So you found the perfect location through your scouting, through your, you know, your digital maps, all that stuff. And now you have to put the stand or the saddle platform in the tree. Right. And I always am, you know, there's a lot of discussion on where does that platform face? Does that platform face right where your shot is going to be? Do you angle it? Do you put it behind the tree? And so I'm just going to start there, and I'm going to ask you, Jason, when you put a tree stand in the tree, walk us through how you set it up and what direction it is facing.
So a lot of times I actually don't like to be just facing a specific trail or necessarily a specific timber where I, you know, expect deer to come out, or even facing out into a food plot or a picked field or whatever, so be it. I actually like to either be quartered off of it or completely 180 from it. Main reason is because when I pick a tree, I like to have a tree that's going to be at least the width of my body. So that way, when I stand up or turn or whatever, I can actually shadow myself behind a tree. It seems to work out pretty well with it. Sometimes you get into those skinnier trees, and that's when deer catch movement. I love evergreen trees are one of my favorites. If you can get up into an evergreen, a cedar or a pine tree, those are some of my favorites because you have cover that you can have underneath of you, underneath your platform. You can get away with a little bit more movement, and you can also have almost like an umbrella effect to where you don't get skylined from deer. That's probably some of my biggest things with placement. I don't want to be 10, 15 yards off of a trail and looking down that trail where I anticipate deer coming out, just because I know my first movement is going to be up when I see a deer.
Right, right. So I'll take it a couple steps further into the detailed side of things here. And that is, I always have an assumption. Like I like to play the odds. Like I assume that there are going to be deer to the, let's say I found a tree and I'm up on the elevation a little bit, the trail is below me, or maybe I'm hunting a specific scrape, or I am hunting a specific fence crossing or a creek crossing or whatever the case is, wherever I feel the highest odds of movement or my potential encounter is going to be, that is where I'm going to be sitting, and I'm going to be facing. That would be, I guess, 90 degrees away from that. And so I'm sitting so that if I have the opportunity, all I have to do is pick my bow up. I can stay seated and I can draw from right. Like if I see him coming down the trail, then I just have to pick my bow up and draw. That's the best odds for me. Now, I also, if they come behind me and they're coming the other direction, well, I can just kind of turn around. I can maybe hear something or look at something. Here they come. I don't have to stand up.
Right.
And so that's where I feel the highest odds are going to be. The other thing is that, okay, I have maybe a little bit of coverage to my blind side. So obviously my blind side is behind me. The tree is behind me. And that way, if something comes to my draw hand side, I can stand up, can be concealed by the tree a little bit more, and maybe get away with a little movement trying to get myself into position, especially if the deer are at a higher elevation than me. Maybe they're coming off and then coming down, or they're working. There's also a trail higher than I am. And so I'm always trying to find spots with the best coverage, the best, because you never want to expose yourself. It's like skyline yourself. If you can help it. And so I'm also trying to figure out where most of the movement is coming from, and then that's going to be my optimal shot. And then everything secondary kind of is like, okay, now can I be concealed, or do I have a good backdrop behind me so I'm not skylined, basically.
Yeah, so to what I was saying with putting my stand on like the reverse side of it, there is a downfall to that too, and the fact of it is you're going to be constantly turning your head, you know, once those deer come out. So there is, you have to use caution with it, and if you can actually quarter off of it, you're probably better. But I would kind of going off of tree stands and putting yourself on the ground and not in a blind or whatever, do you think it's more important to sit with vegetation and stuff completely in front of you, or would you rather find a tree that's going to you can butt up against, you know, like you're turkey hunting, you sit on the ground, you butt up next to the tree. I mean, because there's you have to weigh the odds out of like, am I better having all this stuff in front of me to try to get a clean shot off, or am I better just sitting here not moving and waiting for the optimal shot?
So there's two different things. If I could create my own landscape, like in, do your kids play Minecraft at all?
My son does a little bit.
Son does. Okay. So in Minecraft, you get to build your own environment. Yep. Right. And so if I could Minecraft my own hunting property, in all the best pinch points and fence crossings, I would have a giant pine tree that I could, that, you know, they stay green all year round. They have the best backing, the best cover. They're usually straight. However, there's a whole bunch of little things that you're going to have to trim to get up there. But I'm willing to do the trimming before the season starts, put a stand up in there. And now I have like concealment all around me. Right. And then I just, I'm just putting my stand up in there. I'm trimming all my shooting lanes that I need. And then I can be, you know, like, man, I've hunted a couple of those scenarios and they just don't see you in there. You know,
they don't.
The only issue is you're doing that for concealment, but then you also don't have the best shot behind you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and I can elaborate off that a little bit. My old house, we had pine trees in the back, and I found this perfect spot to where they would come out of a trail and they'd merge into a food plot that I had. And I'd rattled in a 10 point that one morning, and he came in, and where he came in, he actually came in underneath the canopy at like the edge of the canopy, and where the top of his back was like the end of the pine needles and stuff. And when I made my shot, I literally bounced off his back, you know, basically. And it was heartbreaking, but he never knew I was there. And by the time he got to the end of the property, I'd grunted and he came looped back, but he's just out too far at that point. So, I mean, there is downfalls to that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And that would be an ideal, like a pine tree would be ideal for maybe like a food plot scenario,
right?
Where it's maybe a field edge scenario, if that's what you do, maybe a creek crossing that's in a great pinch point, fence crossing, things like that, where you know where the deer movement is coming, basically. So outside of that, I want to, like, if I'm doing a run and gun, okay, now, like, setting up your tree stand for a farm where you're going to leave it up and it's like a historically good place for you to be, then I would also, like, that's one thing. But then going into a run and gun type scenario where let's say I'm out of state, or I'm going into a scenario where I don't really know, I'm just going based off trails, based off terrain, I would put myself in a scenario where I would be sitting down and facing away from the deer movement. So that way, when it comes prime time, or maybe I'm standing up and I'm facing the tree on that tree stand. So it would be similar to a saddle hunting scenario, where on a saddle, we all know that the saddle faces the tree. You're facing the tree and you're able to kind of use that tree for concealment for your movement. And so that's what I would do on like a run and gun scenario where I'm not sure. I'm probably going to need more movement. Maybe I'm not allowed to do a trim shooting lanes. And I don't have the ability to get in there and prepare for some of that stuff. So I want the most concealment. I would probably be a little bit higher. I would probably, or depending on the environment, actually, maybe I'm a little bit lower to try to shoot under the canopy so I don't have to, you know, do so much, trimming or moving branches out of the way and using that trunk to conceal myself. So I do that a lot when I'm doing a run and gun, where I will put the tree in between me and the expected deer movement for concealment, basically. So
I'll go off of that a little bit. A lot of public land hunting, I mean, you can't trim branches and stuff, so you have to have a lot of ratchet straps and stuff like
that. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies, and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back. Literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
That for your hangers. One thing I noticed going out to Nebraska when I decided, oh, I'm going to take a stand, I'm going to take my saddle and whatever, I actually did find myself trying to get into some of those pines. And, you know, like you'd said, you started higher, but, you know, I actually ended up lower because I just put myself in between some, you know, layers of branches. And you don't have to get that high. You just have to get creative with it and using what you can to stay concealed and from being skylined, especially when you can't trim branches. So that takes me to something I wanted to talk about when we were initially talking about the stands. When you're hanging on like a permanent farm that you're going to hunt, what is your level of trimming shooting lanes? I mean, you're basketball size guy, right?
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
I'm a basketball.
It depends,
right? So back in the day, I used to trim airplane landing strips for my spots. Now, usually what I do is I've just had so many years of experience that I don't do much trimming at all. I'll find the tree, I'll get the stand in it, and then I'll maybe there's two or three trails that come down. And what I do is I'll shoot a skinny lane. Maybe it's really not even a lane. It's more pockets to specific trails, to specific places. So like if a deer comes in and he's on a natural movement, and that way I can be like, okay, I have a spot here. I got to let him walk through this little area to get to this next spot. And I know where they're at from trimming them out, but I'm not trimming air like landing strips anymore. It's just little pockets, if I even trim at all. So I would rather just have all that concealment in the tree and find the pockets. Now, the hard part is knowing where those pockets are at. If you set the tree in July and then maybe you think there's a pocket there, well, there might be some additional growth on these trees. Maybe a branch falls, you know, those types of things are kind of hard to judge. But I don't know. You might not have what you think you have when you come in there in November, especially if you don't hunt anything until prime time.
Yeah, I would say definitely carry a pair of hand pruners or a handsaw with you when you go into hunt it for the first time. Because, you know, we'll set stuff up sometimes in the spring, sometimes in the middle of summer. But a lot of our stuff, we actually get finalized normally in and around Labor Day because we don't want to be, you know, too close to the October 1st opener for Illinois. But I do always have pruners with me because something always changes. You know, there's always a twig that goes this way. Or once you're actually finally settled in and you started to disconnect, then you realize like that one's actually in the way. But I like the same thing. I like to envision it almost like a fork. You know, I have an open window here and then I come through here and I try to make sure that there's spots where that those deer are going to be quartered away, broadside, and so on and so forth.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So it really comes down to like, for me anyway, it really comes down to, I'm trying to figure out where I would rate certain things, right? Obviously the size of tree is important because, I mean, I'll be honest, I've hunted out of a tree that's probably the size of a softball. I can remember I was going after one buck one year and I knew exactly where he was coming out 3 days in a row. I kind of was bouncing all over, and I kind of whittled it back to a single fence crossing that was kind of in the timber a ways, and there was one tree about the size of a softball that I climbed up in, and I put my tree stand in, and I was swaying when it was windy in this tree, but I felt like it was the best. Now, of course, that buck didn't show up that night,
right?
But I put myself in a position where I was kind of standing all night long on a lone wolf assault with my bow right in front of me, right screwed into the tree. And I cut all the branches from basically my waist to my head out of the way. And I was facing away from the fence crossing. And then I was standing up facing the tree. Now, a softball size tree going up my midsection and up into my head is not very good concealment. So it's one of those things where sometimes you have to be really creative in your setup, especially if you're in a tree like a pine tree where there's so many branches, or what's a tree that kind of like one of those river birch trees.
Yeah.
They kind of go straight up for a while with big trunks, not very many branches low to the ground. It takes a while to get up in there, or as far as getting other branches. And so a lot of times on those types of trees, there's a big V at some point. And if it's around that 15-foot mark, I'll set right in the middle of that.
Yep.
And so I'll have my back to the one part of the V, and I'll wedge my tree stand platform right down into the other side of it. And so now I have to my back and to my front. And so that's great, except for now you got to start worrying, especially if you're facing the tree or yeah. You're in a saddle. Now you have to start also thinking about, okay, if it gets by me or if he's coming from a different direction, do I have room to move my bow between myself and the tree in front of me to get a different shot angle off? And how many times am I going to have to do that if he's coming down a trail where if I don't get him on this side, I got to come through the tree? Or worse yet, I don't know, have you ever had to do this where there's no room and you've had to go on the outside of the tree and hand your bow to yourself and then pull your arm through and then have to give your bow back to yourself, you know, exchange arms, and then try to get a shot off? That sucks, having to do something like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of advantages in situations like that of shooting a gun. Because, I mean, if you're not paying attention to your cams or your limbs or your bow, I mean, you'll derail it real quick. One thing I was thinking about with the concealment, you know, even on a softball sized tree or whatever, many years ago, we used to go to like fabric stores or stores where you could buy like artificial flowers and stuff like that. And we would zip tie them to like our platforms of our tree stands. And that will add just another element into creating that canopy underneath of you. So that way when deer look up, they don't necessarily see you right away. They see, you know, blurred vision. So.
Yep. What I used to do back in the day when I was cutting big shooting lanes, there would always be like a branch, you know, maybe the size of a quarter or a 50 cent piece that it would trim out. And so it would have a V on it in some spots. So I would hang that bigger branch maybe behind me or off on a different direction where maybe I didn't expect deer to be. And I would create the back cover for myself, or I would hang it off of the backside of my tree stand. So exactly what you said, it would create a little bit more illusion that there's all this trees, you know, those branches and stuff that are up there that could potentially conceal you. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great idea. If you're in that area where you picked out the perfect tree, but there's just not the perfect cover, you can create the cover. I mean, you can make it on your stand, or you can, you know, trim some stuff out and do that way. So when you're deciding on these saddle hunts or permanent tree stand hunts or a mobile hunt or whatever, there's two sides to it. I feel like when you're on a farm that you're actually going to leave some permanent stands on, there is that big joy of success, like when it actually all comes together and you actually shoot that deer off that trail or off that food plot or whatever. But then there's the other side of things where you're, you know, hanging hunt and you walk in and you pick out the tree for that afternoon, whatever tree it may be. And then there's that element of surprise, and it actually works that way. So, I mean, there is, you know, pros to both of them, and there's work that goes into both of them. And a lot of times I found with the permanent stuff, there's a lot more thought that goes into that versus a hanging hunt. It's more like, where can I get to in this amount of time? And can I find a tree that's going to be suitable for what I'm putting in it, stand or saddle?
Yep.
That my 100%. Thoughts.
Yeah, 100%. The other thing that I don't think a lot of people do that they probably need to, and this is a little, I guess it would be a little bit of a cheat code for what I do, is if you're expecting a deer to come through at 20 yards, you set your tree stand up, then go back down, then go to the trail where you think you have the highest odds of taking that shot, and then look back up at that tree stand. Maybe even get on the deer's level, maybe drop down to your knees, or you know, maybe you're not tall, maybe you're tall, I don't know. Look back up at the tree and then say to yourself, envision it. If you're doing it in July, or maybe you're doing a run and gun this, you know, then you could do this. But you look up at the tree and you go, am I going to be skylined? What do I have for backing? And is my movement going to be caught? And then you can say to yourself, maybe, dude, this tree stand is maybe not in the right spot. Maybe I need to flip it behind the tree. Maybe I need to check it out. Because have you ever had a buck or any deer come up to you, look at your ladder or look at your climbing sticks, and then follow them up the tree and then look at you?
Absolutely. Yep.
Like 100 times, I feel like it's happened.
And if you actually pay attention to some of the stuff on the stands, you know, there'll be shiny labels or there'll be stuff that's bright, you know, you got to cover that stuff up. I mean, it makes a big difference. One thing I was thinking about when you were talking about climbing back down, you know, this is where a lot of times my brother and I will set stands together. So one of us will be up in the tree and one of us will walk around and we'll trim those lanes from the ground too. There's a pro to that, obviously, of having that person there. The flip side of it is sometimes doing it by myself or him doing it by himself, what happens is if I go to hunt out of one of his stands he's hung, he's taller than I am, and he'll put those steps that much further apart. It'll be awkward to get into, and it'll take a few times of hunting for me to get comfortable in it, or I'll have to adjust it again. And so there's a process of elimination when you have a hunting buddy that you do go with too.
Yeah, dude, that's exactly what I used to do back in the day when I was filming. Because when you're filming, you have this entire different aspect. You have to get two guys in the tree, and that guy has to have, like, his range of motion can also not be impeded because he's got a camera with a camera arm and all this stuff. So what I used, like, what we would do is we'd set up the two tree stands, and then we would go in, and the camera guy would sit in my spot, and then he would go back and sit in his spot, and then I would have the pole saw, and then he'd be like, give me specific directions, like right two steps up 12 feet. And then I would rest my saw on the branch and he would go yes or no. And he would shake it and then cut it down. And then we'd trim. And then meanwhile, he's up in the tree, maybe pruning some like little branches that would get in the way of his camera arm, or maybe get in the way of maybe me even drawing my bow. And so that's a huge thing. Because back in the day, man, I thought I had the best spot. Tree stand fit in there perfect. I was comfortable. Deer come by. I go to draw my bow, and I don't have enough room in my stand to draw my bow because it's hitting a big branch behind me. And now I'm screwed. Maybe I'm way out on the edge of my stand, and I'm maybe having to put my body in an unnatural position. That sucks, man.
That's the worst thing you want, is to be uncomfortable. I mean, that was another thing. You're talking about a big branch, you know, for your arm drawn back, but what about a branch that you cut off and then it happens to lie right in the middle of your back when you're sitting there? You know, you don't want that discomfort because you're just going to constantly move while you're sitting there. So take your time and set those things up, because, I mean, it's a matter of making a good hunt or a lengthy hunt or just packing it up and leaving.
Fact. Now, all right. One thing I think we definitely need to talk about, though, we talked about put yourself in the deer's position and look up. We've talked about trimming, you know, the proper shooting lanes. We've talked about where to put your saddle or your tree stand on the tree relative to the terrain that you're in. But let's talk about movement in the tree for a second. And I want to get your take on this. I've hunted out of a saddle now for 3 years. And it's not solely a saddle, but sometimes I'm always in a saddle now. I don't wear a safety harness anymore because I like the ability to stand up in my tree stand and maybe lean off and relax my body a little bit or sit down whenever I need to. So I prefer this hybrid method of saddle and tree stand. However, there are times where I go in with a platform and I do like a run and gun type deal and, you know, set my saddle up. Have you put much time in a saddle at all?
Yeah. So last year I did quite a bit. The year before I probably half the season I dabbled with it. And so last year I bought a pretty decent one. And I got comfortable with it. And there's pros and cons to it, obviously, with either or. There's pros and cons to ladder stands and box blinds also. You know, so it's not like I'm going to prefer one over the other. I think it's all situational for me. The one thing that I can say is, I think I've mentioned before, the platform. I'd like to get one of the angled platforms for my heels to kind of rest on if I'm leaning back. And maybe a decent set of knee pads for when you actually do come up to the tree and you know, hug your knees or you put your knees up against the tree. Maybe those things. But outside of that, yeah, I mean, I've gotten pretty comfortable. I actually buried a telephone pole in the backyard that I can practice off of just shooting and stuff. So
nice. So here's the thing. I feel like I move around more in a saddle. And I also feel that in order to get a better shot or the best shot, I feel like I'm moving more in a saddle to get into position for my shot. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're moving more in a saddle?
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
I yes and no. I mean, I do. You know, sometimes it depends on the size of the deer that come out. If a deer's out in the field, you know, I may move equally as much if I'm in a regular stand, just trying to get, you know, do I want to be standing? Do I want to be here? Do I want to be there? And it made me, we can go right back to what you're talking about, but I have to ask this question. Is noise or movement more important to the deer?
I think it's movement.
Okay.
Well, I mean, if it's metal on metal clinking and clanking,
yeah,
then, cause this year I sat in a carbon fiber platform. I sat in it for 2 hunts and I'll never sit in another one again. It was carbon fiber. It was just that shit drives me crazy. So I'm not doing it. Okay.
Yeah.
So I went back to my metal one and it was completely quiet. Now, if it's like that kind of stuff, then you have a problem.
Yeah.
But if it's just like a little bit of like maybe branches or maybe just, I don't know, a little bit.
Yeah.
Sound is definitely more important if it's loud. But the thing about it is what's the scenario? Like, I feel like every scenario is different in that.
Yeah, it is. I was just thinking about it just because like, I know for a fact, like, you know, certain stand movements or, you know, an elbow pop, heaven forbid, will alarm deer, you know? So I was just curious what your thoughts were when you're talking about this movement in correlation to noise, like which one is going to catch their attention first?
Yeah. Well, I think if your gear is quiet, then you shouldn't have that problem.
Shut up.
And I'll be honest, I will not have a problem with noise on my equipment.
Yeah.
If I, I, I've come back to a tree stand that it's prime time. Like it is, I climb up in my tree stand. I sit down and maybe I haven't adjusted the strap since the previous year. And I stand up and I'm getting ready for prime time, you know, maybe a morning hunt, and you can hear the straps, like they're not ripping, but they're, you can hear that them expanding, or yeah, maybe now the cable is expanding, or maybe it's a little tweak in the metal. I will, and the stand needs to be retightened. I'll leave everything in the tree. I'll climb down mid, like best time of day, and I will adjust that, because I am not, I've had, oh man, I can almost remember it. It was like, I think it was 2013. I probably had 170 inch deer coming straight towards me, and I stood up and my tree stand popped, and he heard that, and he didn't take another, he didn't see me. He heard it. He didn't take another step. He dropped down into the ridge. Like there was two ridges in front of me. He dropped down into the far ridge and I never saw him again. So, you know, do whatever you want, but I'll tell you this, man, I'm not hunting with loud equipment, period.
Yeah. So go back to the saddle and the movement and everything. Do you find the saddle more comfortable just for the fact that you can swing here or there, get on this side or that side?
Yeah, man.
You know, if deer are over here and they're coming from a spot you didn't think they'd be at, you can actually shift into that position to where you're not moving as much as you would be if you have to turn in a platform stand.
Yeah, there's definitely pros and cons, right? You know, for a saddle, the thing that I have yet to master is getting in position for a draw arm shot. Meaning if they're coming to, for me, it would be my right. If they're coming to my right, then I have to swing all the way around. I have to twist my hips. I got to bring my bow between me and the tree. My tether is underneath of my left arm. And then so sometimes I will just balance on the platform, because I hunt out of an XL platform. So it's the biggest one that Tethered makes. I believe I have one from somebody else, I think too. But anyway, I like the big platforms, and then I have to turn around and do that. Now, if he continues to come to my right, then I have to reverse, come back through the tree, turn all the way around and do that. Now, that hasn't happened a lot, but I've had does and small bucks come do that. And so that doesn't mean that a big buck can't do that. I feel like I can be a little bit more mobile while I'm in the tree on a stand. But when it comes to a saddle, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Saddles are awesome because there's literally hardly any gear you have to take into the tree with you. You're wearing your safety harness, the saddle part of it. Your sticks, you know, are just your sticks. You're taking those in regardless. And then your platform's real tiny. And so, I don't know, man, I'm really trying to find, that's why I like the hybrid method so much, right? So if I need to, I can stand. If I want to, I can sit. If I want to swing around, I can do that too. So I am in a position where if I'm going on a public land hunt, I'm taking a saddle, but if I'm going to set up a farm, I would rather be in a tree stand if I could.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I agree. I don't see the biggest benefit I feel for a saddle for me is going to be on public land out of state, or it's going to be I'm on one of my farms and I caught movement in a different area multiple days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then I may just say, hey, I'm going to take a couple sticks and I'm going to take my saddle and I'm going to move over that way. But for me, comfort and everything, and just for the fact that it's set up, it's less to carry in. And a lot of the hunts, you know, you're not getting a half a day to hunt out of, you know, because the time frame with everything. I would probably prefer a platform, but I do enjoy the mobility and where you can get in, because that's another thing I guess we should probably elaborate with too. You know, in a saddle, you can hunt out of the most crooked tree you want.
Yep. Now, with that, some of these, like Lone Wolf, right? Lone Wolf, XOP, Novex, those are Lone Wolf custom gear. Those brands have the ability to adjust your tree stand in a crooked tree.
Yep.
A lot of stands do not have that ability. You have to have a straight tree. A climber, you have to have a straight tree. So if you're hunting pine stands in the South, you know, any stand will work. But here in the Midwest, man, if I'm trying to put myself in the right spot and I don't have the right tree, you know, I'm looking at one of those stands to get the job done. And I really hope that I can get a tree stand in. If not, you know, I'm going to go towards the saddle.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. With the hanging of your tree stands, and this is on your farms, on your private ground or whatever that you can hunt, how much thought do you give into when you set your trail cameras up and your stands up in correlation to each other? Do you have a distance thing that, like, I don't want my camera any closer than X to my tree stand? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So it's, well, now that Iowa has this new law where you're not allowed to use cell cameras, but cell cams cannot be used in the aid of harvesting an animal. Meaning, if I'm on my farm, let's say I'm sitting in my truck, a picture goes off, I go to that tree stand and I shoot that deer, that's technically illegal. Okay. So, but I can still use cell cams. And I use them because most of my farm, like I have one farm that's an hour and a half away and the other one's close to 4 hours away from where I hunt. So I can't use that information that way, but I don't ever have a scenario where I have a tree stand that is legit right on top of, you know what I mean? It's not right on top of where I'm shooting or where my tree stand is. Maybe one, I take that back. I do have one where there's a fence crossing. And then I'm not hunting the fence crossing. I can see my trail camera over top of the fence crossing, but then I'm hunting this big draw that connects to a ridge that runs down to a cornfield. So I'm hunting this like little interchange there and I can see it, but it's not a cell cam. It's a regular SD card camera because I have to have, I have to have it. I have to have a regular camera because I don't have any cell service.
One other thought with the cameras and stuff is your focus on inventory of deer, or are you more worried about patterning deer on these specific farms?
Well, it's inventory in the summer and it's patterning closer, like September, October, November, obviously patterning deer, seeing where they're coming in and out, things like that. And so that would probably play a role in where I set my tree stands.
Yep.
Okay. But I'll tell you this, man, there are some trees that suck to get into, like a locust, that have the thorns. But for some reason, those damn trees are always in the spot that I want to be in.
Oh, yeah. It in a locust pod, a deer will eat. You know, so I mean, a tree like that is actually beneficial too, because it gives you food right in your area.
Yep. 100%.
The one I will say, like, for like a safety side of things, you know, when you start getting into trees that are bigger than your body is around, you know, it becomes a safety issue as far as hanging straps and stuff, you know, so use that thought too, when you're hanging your stands. It's not always the smallest tree that is worse. It could be the biggest tree that could be the worst.
100%. Really. 100%. And make sure that if you are, there's some guys who they'll use ratchet straps, right? Make sure those ratchet straps are weighted and they're connected to your tree pot, the right way. Because everything that comes in a box with a tree stand or a saddle goes through, like a tree stand, what's that called? Tree stand safety.
Safety
testing.
And they're all rated for certain poundage.
Exactly. Now make sure that what you're doing, like I know guys who use carabiners to attach tree stands, and that's not what you should be doing, right? Because those carabiners are probably for like use of stuff in your garage, but not in hanging, you know, 300 pounds off of a tree.
Right.
And so make sure that the equipment that you're using, if you're, for example, a big tree, like a giant big tree, well, I would make sure you go get the biggest, longest ratchet strap that you can find that's weighted for the highest weight if you're going to replace what comes with your tree stand.
Right.
And so just be very careful for that, because I don't like, man, remember some of those tree stands back in the day, they would come with a ratchet strap.
Yeah.
And like, and then you're trying to do like a mobile hunt with them, and it's just click, 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 click.
Yep.
Click, 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 click. And you're like, I know they hear me. I know they hear me.
Do you remember the tree stands that used to come with the chains and a hook?
Those were millenniums back in the day, right?
Well, there was millenniums. There was a couple of, like, River's Edge, I think, made some and whatever. But it was just
chains.
One chain at the top. You'd throw it around and you just hook it. And then you'd cinch it down. And that was it.
Yeah.
There was no ratchet strap, no nothing. It was just the one chain. And it was the loudest thing, you know, and the chain was only so long. So, like, you could get to the top of the tree and the chain's not long enough, you know, and you got to start all over. I want to elaborate a little bit more with the tree stand stuff, but I want to shift. I want to shift it to food plot stuff. So when guys have ground that they can plant food plots on, and they intend to hunt in or around these food plots, is it more important to plant a food plot to the perfect tree, or to find the perfect tree and then put the plot in? What are your thoughts on that?
I'm guessing it would be find the location and make the food plot.
Yeah.
Right. Cause if you have the perfect, let's just say for an example here, you have out in front of you, you have a bean field or a corn field, and it just borders this big chunk of timber where deer come out in different spots. There's going to be spots along there that it is going to be, have the best deer movement. There's probably going to be more scrapes that show up than any other spot. So if you were going to say, okay, I have a 200 acre cornfield in front of me that comes across this timberline, where along this big timberline do I actually want to leave the corn standing? And it's going to be in regards to where the deer come out, which is more than likely going to be where your where a specific tree stand is going to be. So what I would do is first find natural deer movement, second find the tree, and then third put a food plot in the area where your wind can be under control, where like you can plan for specific winds, winds and even thermals. Because let's say you have a good wind, but if there's no wind, and then your thermals kind of seep down in, maybe you have a south wind, but the food plot is below you in terrain, and then the thermals kick in because there's no wind, then now your thermals are going right down into this food plot. You know, these are things to think about when you're doing it. But I would say natural deer movement first. I would say tree stand location second, and then I would put food plot third. That should determine where you put your food plot.
Okay, so
if that makes sense to you?
Yeah, it makes absolute sense to me. So if there's no ability to do food plots, say it's just it's either timber or it's a fence line, there's no perfect tree to sit in, you know, but maybe there's a tree that's down further.
Okay.
Do you take the tree that's down further in hopes that deer come by you and you sit there time in and time out? Or do you, what's your alternative then? I guess is my question.
Okay, ask that one more time.
Okay, so if the property that you have to hunt is just say it's a fence line, or just say it's a solid block of timber, let's throw the food plots and fields out of the equation. You know deer movement is in point A, okay? Point B is either, this perfect tree, but point B is, say, 200 yards away. Are you going to hang your stand at point B because you have the perfect tree location, or are you going to try to use a different method to where point A is? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So maybe like a ground blind or hunting on the ground or maybe. Yeah. I mean, you got to be creative.
Yeah.
Right. If you feel that, well, if point A for in your scenario, the deer are going to walk by it, well, that might be a good spot, right? Because as we all know, if you're hanging out in a food plot or on a field and you're hunting field edges and all the deer pile out, none of them are shooters or within shooting range. And now you have to get down out of your stand after it gets dark, or maybe it's middle of the day. I don't know, whatever name is put us like enter that scenario. And now you're having to walk through deer to get out of there. You're just busting deer out and you're educating them on where you're at. And so I don't like to hunt destination food sources.
Yeah.
I like to hunt travel corridors and bedding areas and staging areas. So that way I know when I get out of my stand, I'm not disrupting, I'm not having to walk through an entire, you know, area to get back to my truck, which it's bumping deer after. I mean, bumping deer coming in sucks, and bumping deer leaving sucks too, because there's a lot of guys out there that are like, hey, you know, they just think you're a coyote or something. They can't see you as well. Well, yes, they can see you. They can actually see you very well. And they know you're not a coyote because of the way you look. And the fact that if you're doing this 3, 4, 5 nights in a row, they're going to catch on to that. And then they're just not going to start. They're not going to show up anymore.
Well, and I mean, you just answered basically the question I was going to answer or ask next was, you know, how much weight do you put into where you put your tree stand as far as your access and your exit? And I mean, you just answered it, but
100%.
Those deer, not only are they seeing you, but if you pay attention to them, when you bump them, they will actually try to get downwind of you. They will try to smell you because they know automatically you're a threat to them. So to that point, I mean, I'm going to actually work harder to get my stand in a better location to get in and out than I am to maybe the perfect tree is over here. So I guess that's kind of what I was asking in another nutshell was, you know, sometimes we have to hunt off of where the movement is just for our access and exit.
100%. Like for me, I when I do my scouting, I go, this is a good spot. How do I get to it? And if I can't get to it the right way, well, then it's no longer a good spot.
So,
right. Cause if I have to go through a bedding area or some kind of, where I'm disrupting deer to get in there on an afternoon hunt, or if I'm blowing through a field in order to get to this stand, like, I hope you know that I've had, when I first started hunting my main farm, all these like 17, 20 years ago, the farm that I've hunted the most. Well, I started hunting and I was parking near this pond and I was walking back because I felt, oh, my truck is too much. It's too much for him. Well, I was wrong, right? The truck actually is the best thing because it's a truck. It's not a human walking through a cattle pasture. So now I take my truck all the way back. Or in my other farm, I take an e-bike all the way back and they just look at me. They're just like, huh, what's that thing? Or they know, hey, that's just a truck, whatever. You know, I see trucks every day. And so that doesn't disrupt as much as you think. And so I always err on the side of caution and I try to disrupt deer as little as possible and keep a small footprint. But there's times when, especially if you're going in for a very strategic strike, you're going to leave a big impact. So you better have your T's crossed and your I's dotted in order to get to that spot. Hunt it in the perfect scenarios, because you know that when you go in and when you come out, there's going to be deer all around you. And they're going they're going to catch you.
Yep, absolutely.
And there's that.
Yeah, right? I mean.
Anything else we need to talk about? As far as tree stand placement, on trees, like, I know we didn't get into anything like ground blind related, because I'll be honest, man, I don't like hunting out of ground blinds, man. I do not like hunting out of ground blinds.
I will say I have, and I've shot deer out of them. I shot turkeys out of them, and you know, they are very good for kids. They are very good for certain applications also, you know, standing cornfields. If you can go in and clear an area and put a blind in a standing cornfield. I mean, you got a lot of cover with that. There's certain areas with pine trees you can use the brush to brush in your blind that are beneficial. The one thing I found, it's always darker in a blind, and that could be a elevated box blind, it could be a ground blind. They are cumbersome. The wind blows them away. They rip. The zippers break. Zippers are noisy. Magnets can be noisy. So there's some downfalls to them, but I always have a ground blind each year, just in case there's a spot. If I go on an out-of-state hunt, I do have a packable ground blind that I take now, just because I think there's applications for that as well. But yeah, as far as tree stand stuff, the only other thing I could throw in there is use safety. You know, when you're hanging these stands and stuff, you know, use a lifeline if you're not staying attached with a saddle and so on and so forth. So,
yep, absolutely. Absolutely, my friend. Well, is there anything else that we need to talk about before we shut her down?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, if you are going to be setting up tree stands, I mean, I don't know if it's going to be this coming week, but next week I have some time. I think I'm going to be able to get out to my farms and start doing a little prep work for that while the kids are at camp. I think I'm going to be able to get a little work done. Outside of that, man, make sure safety is first. Safety has to be the first and foremost. There's been times where I've tried to get into some crazy trees to get the job done. And I maybe wasn't thinking like I should. And maybe I'm jumping from limb to limb, boot slips. Sometimes you fall. I've taken a fall. Luckily haven't fallen all the way to the ground. Last year in Kansas, I slipped off my climbing stick because I had mud on my boots, and luckily I had a lineman's belt on, or I could have got seriously injured. And so it saved my potential life there. Don't know how bad it would have been, but so just take safety precautions, especially if you're trying to get a kid into a tree, right? Like, my God, guys, nothing. It's not worth it. So safety first. Also, huge shout out to our partner over at Code Blue Scents. If you want to find out more information about the type of scents that Code Blue offers, go visit CodeBlueScents.com. Discount code right now is NFC20 for 20% off. So go take a look at that. Outside of that, any final words?
Not much, but I can tell you this much. Next Monday, I will be in Florida, so I wish you luck.
You son of a bitch. You son of a bitch. Anyway, good vibes, everybody. Have a good week, and we'll talk to you next time. Whoops, forgot to do this here. Connected, stop. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.